All right. So my name is Carl Engelke. I'm an MD PhD student at the university where I study prostate cancer. In fact, I have a project right now where I'm using CRISPR to genetically modify some cells to investigate cancer. So one more word and you guys will have bingo. But before that, I was a trumpet player, and I studied at Indiana University and the Royal Academy of Music in London. And you know, at my last talk, I said that what got me interested in the trumpet was Star Wars. Well, that wasn't the entire story, because what got me introduced to classical music in the first place was Looney Tunes. All right? And one of my very favorite Looney Tunes was one that's called What's Opera Doc, in which Elmer Fudd proposes to kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit. Now, a lot of that musical material comes from an opera cycle called Der Ring des Nibelungen, or The Ring of the Nibelung by Richard Wagner. It was written in the 19th century over 26 years. It's an epic, epic, epic opera cycle, and I really love it, and I want to talk to you a lot about it today. Now, its runtime is about 15 hours, so you're going to be, you know, settle down, make yourselves comfortable. So it ran over like a weekend, starting Friday evening, going to Sunday morning. But we're going to try and go over a lot of it in a 20-minute talk. Now, disclaimer, I'm not like a Wagner expert. There are probably a lot of you in the audience who know more about this than I do, but if graduate school has taught me one thing, it's how to give talks to more well-informed audiences than myself. One other thing. Those of you who were at my last Nerd Night talk know that I like to have really interactive talks. And this one's actually particularly well suited to it because there's a lot of tie-ins with the mythology that's in the Ring Cycle to analogs in Norse mythology. So if any of you in the audience feel the urge to, just speak up with what the analogous, you know, god is in Norse mythology, I would ask that you leave right now. All right, so the Ring Cycle is actually a series of four operas, and it actually follows kind of the format of a third grade book report, which is you have introduction, Das Rheingold, or the Rheingold. You have Die Walküre, the Valkyrie, which is the rising action. You have the climax, which is Siegfried, and you have the falling action, which is Götterdämmerung, spoiler alert. So I think that the reason that so many operas are so completely full of waffle and inaccessible is because you don't really find out what's going on plot-wise or musically beforehand. You just go there and it's all in this foreign language and it's all crazy and everything. So what I'd like to do is kind of go over it so that potentially when you go and watch these operas, Wagner's a lot of waffle anyway, but a lot more of it will make sense to you. So I'm going to go over these first two operas. And hopefully Siegfried would make sense to you at this point, and honestly, no one understands Götterdämmerung. All right. This epic opera cycle begins where all epic operas, or all epics begin, which is with E flat. I'm serious. What do you think makes the Eroica Symphony so damn heroic? It's E flat. Okay. So this bomb eventually goes on for a while and becomes kind of the theme for nature, which sounds like this. Now, I'd like you to pay attention to that upward rising broken chord or arpeggio because it's going to be very important. It's going to come back a lot later, and it's going to be the foundation of a lot of other leitmotifs that you may have picked up on from the title. So that progresses and becomes a little bit more complicated. I told you there was going to be a lot of E flat. And it gets even more complicated and sounds like this. Yes, the nature of the flowing Rhine, whatever. So then the Rhine maidens show up, and they're frolicking about, singing about how much they love life and the universe and everything, and a spotlight comes down on this pile of gold up here, and that's the Rhine gold. And for the first time, we hear the theme of the Rhine gold, and then we hear the Rhine maidens singing about it. It sounds like this. It's in the trumpet part.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!
always reminded me of that third Austin Powers movie where the bad guy's like, I love gold. It's just like that, actually. So they're having their happy, I guess, naked time. And this Nibelung, this ugly, like, dwarf hobgoblin guy named Alberic shows up. And he thinks he's the man, right? And he starts flirting with them and trying to attract their attention. And they're just completely messing with him. And he notices that pile of gold. And he goes, oh, what's that? So one of the Rhine maidens says, oh, that Rhine gold? Well, if you were to renounce love... I promise this is all going to be important later. All right. If you renounce love, you could forge a magical ring. And gain great power over entire populations of people. And so Alberic finally realizes that they're messing with him. And he renounces love and he steals all the Rhine gold and he storms off to make the ring. Yes, always. So, scene two. Now, I'd like to go back to just those first four notes of the ring theme. Because the scene change starts with something that sounds kind of like that. Which transitions to the theme for the newly built castle Valhalla, which is in the distance. And the gods are waking up. So Votan, who's the chieftain of the gods, wakes up with his wife Fricka right next to him. And she says, wow, Votan, that's an amazing castle, but how on earth did we pay for this? And Votan goes, well, funny story. I kind of promised Fafnir and Fossil that they could have your sister. And she goes, you what? And Fricka comes running on stage, the sister, and says, oh my god, Votan, you've got to help me. They're here, the giants are here, and they're demanding payment. And then the giants show up hard on her heels. And Votan goes, I don't have anything else to give you. I don't know what to do. Like, what am I? And just as they're dragging Fricka off stage, Loga finally shows up. He's this kind of like sly counselor dude. He's the god of fire. He's really slippery, and he's got this weird music that sounds like this. Endlich Jubel! And he says, gee, boss, well, I've scoured the world and I can't find anything that people would give up love for. But wait a second. I just heard of this one guy who renounced love for a big pile of gold. I bet we could make use of that. So what they do is they hop in Donner's chariot and they descend into Nibelheim, which is where all the dwarf hobgoblins live, right? And it's amazing. There's like a chorus of 22 anvils that are specifically tuned, going ding 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 ding. Yeah, it's a chorus of anvils. Have you ever heard of such a thing? So they get down to Nibelheim, and there's Alberic, and he's forged the ring, and he's enslaved the entire Nibelung race by doing this, right? And he's got them all working for him, making these amazing, marvelous crafts out of the Rhinegold, and especially the master forger there is his brother Mima, who has fashioned a Tarn helm for him, or a magic helmet. So when Votan and Loga arrive, they're like, what's that? He's like, oh, it's this amazing magic helmet that I've got. They're like, psst, magic helmet? What the heck is that? And so Alberic responds,
yes, magic helmet, and I'll give you a sample.
So he turns into a dragon on the spot, and they're like, whoa, okay, that's pretty impressive, but I bet you can't turn it into something really, really small. So Alberic's like, psst, watch this, and he turns into a toad, and they go, boom, and they catch him, and they lock him up in chains, and they drag him back to Valhalla with all of the Rhine gold. All right. So at this point, they make him ransom himself for all of the Rhine gold, and they're just taking it from him, and Votan makes up this contract with him that says, I will let you free if you give me the Rheingold. And whenever Votan makes a contract, he brings out his big spear and he makes a contract. And it has something like this. So it's that big descending line, and that'll come back again and again and again and again. So he makes this contract, and he's giving up all the gold, and Albrecht is holding back the ring, and Votan grabs the ring off of his finger. And let's listen again to the ring theme. Because as soon as he grabs the ring, Albrecht curses him, and it sounds like this. Attention, right? Sounds familiar. Okay, and so they pile on all this gold, and you know, Votan gives them most of the Rheingold, and the giants are like, I can still see a little bit of blonde hair, so I don't really. Here's the Tarnhelm, we'll put that on top. And then the giants go, I can still see your eye through this little chink in the wall of gold right there. I'm just like, no, I'm not giving up the ring. So they start dragging Fricka away when this mysterious woman named Erda shows up, and she's like, oh, girl. There's a curse on that gold, and you need to give it up, or bad things are going to happen to Valhalla, and the demise of the gods and all of that. Okay, and she has a theme, and it sounds like this. Sounds like that nature theme, right? But it's a little bit more primordial, a little darker, which is great because she's like the primeval goddess of the earth. So Votan's like, okay, fine, whatever. You know, here's the ring. Go ahead and take it. And as soon as he gives up the ring, the giants start quarreling about this gold. Fafnir kills Fossil, puts on the Tarnhelm, and takes the F off. I was like, oh, really dodged a bullet there. Okay, so everything's hunky-dory. He doesn't have to deal with the curse of the ring. And they're able to move on a little bit, but Photon's like, oh, but I really want that gold. How am I going to get that back without breaking this contract that I met? So he starts scheming about how to do it, and his schemes sound like this. Which is followed by this weird theme that we can't really place at this point. So go ahead and just tuck that into your pocket, and we'll come back to it later, probably. You know, I never know. Anyway, so at this point, the gods are free to cross the Rainbow Bridge into Valhalla, except the Rhinemaidens are still lamenting their lack of gold, and Loga turns straight to the audience and says, Chewie, I've got a bad feeling about this. Okay, so, and that's the end of Das Rheingold, and we move over into the second opera, or Saturday Morning, or whatever you want, which is called Die Walküre, or The Valkyrie. Now, at this point, about 25 years has gone by, and Votan has sired some children out of wedlock. In fact, he really liked that Erda woman because he fathered 9 daughters with her, the Valkyries. We'll get back to those. And he fathered 2 mortal children from a mortal woman, mysteriously. We'll get back to those, too.
Naughty.
Very naughty. All right. So the opera opens with this nameless fellow who's like fleeing in a storm scene, pursued by unseen foes. It's kind of like the Castle Anthrax scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I don't know if you remember that. Right. So he bangs on this door and says, you got to let me in, you got to let me in. They're going to try and kill me. And so this woman, Zaglinda, lets him in and is like, wow, you're kind of a weird homeless guy, but I'm strangely attracted to you. At which point, her husband, Hunding, shows up, and here's his music. Not ominous, not ominous. But he says, you know what? Laws of hospitality dictate that I have to offer you shelter for the night. So he sings about that.
Heil ist mein Herd, heil sei dir mein Herd.
Does that sound a little bit familiar to anyone? sound a little bit like this. It's the ring. It's the ring. Anyway, so Zygmunt, the nameless guy, is going, oh man, well, I grew up with this family. I had a father and a sister and a mother, and then I was separated from them at a young age, and I've been wandering the earth since, and just recently I ran into this wedding where this woman was being forced to marry someone, and so I killed all of the man's family who were trying to marry her off to try and save her, and now they're trying to kill me. It's the weirdest thing. And I'm just full of sorrow. My name is Valsa, or Woeful, and when he sings it, it sounds like this. Gosh. I feel like we just heard someone singing something like that. Weird. Anyway, Hunding goes, you know, that's the strangest thing, because I was just at this wedding where all of my relatives were slaughtered by this weird homeless-looking dude who broke in. So obviously we have problems, but, you know, the laws of hospitality dictate that you're my guest, so you're safe tonight. And it's all very like the Princess Bride, good night, Wesley, I shall likely kill you in the morning, which is basically what it says, in the morning we duel. So, anyway, they go to bed, and Sieglinde roofies Hunding, so he stays to sleep and then comes back down, and Valsa, in the meantime, has been complaining, oh, woe is me, I don't have any like weapons, how on earth am I going to fight, and a spotlight hits the middle of this big tree in the house where there's a sword, and Sieglinde's like, we hear this, bum beam, beam, bum bum, bum beam. Really quietly in the background, I'm like, huh, we've heard that before. What does that have to do with? He says, oh my God, you know, when I was young, my father promised me that there would be a sword when I needed one in my hour of greatest need. And Sieglinde says, oh, you know, that's so weird because my father jammed this sword into the middle of this tree and then said whoever took it was going to be my husband. And he goes, oh my God, there's a sword there. And so he pulls it out. And they always do this in like in the least ergonomically way. They do it like this. And that's how they have to pull it out, I think, in every production. Anyway, then we hear. And she says, oh my God, you're my twin brother, Zygmunt. We're twins. Also, I'm in love with you. So they get busy and tra-la-la. In the meantime, back in Valhalla, Votan's like, oh my God, Fricka, you're not going to believe this. So you know how that Rheingold that I kind of wanted and then I lost and then I want to get again? I've got a perfect way to do it. So like one of my sons just killed this dude who was married to my daughter, and now they're getting busy, or is going to kill, and they're going to get busy, and that's how I'm going to get my Rheingold back. And Fricka says, you what? Fricka, the goddess of home and the hearth and family and marriage and all of that, she's like, well, you can't do that anyway. The treaty prevents you from doing that. Well, you can't have a hand in it. And obviously, you've been helping Zygmunt by giving him the sword. Ah, crap. So when Wotan's other daughter, Brunhilde, shows up, one of the Valkyries, and says, hey, boss, you know, I'd really like to help you here. You know, I need to help you out. I'm going to help Zygmunt in battle. He says, no, you can't help Zygmunt in battle. Zygmunt needs to die, and that's how it's got to be because, you know, the honey back home, and it's, yeah, all of that. So Brunhilde eventually relents. But later that night, she visits the two twins of Wotan. And at this point, there's a very important concept, which is the Valsung race, which is the children and descendants of Wotan. And that concept sounds like this musically. And she informs them that there's this unavoidable fate. That Zygmunt is going to die in this upcoming battle, but don't worry, Sieglinde, you're going to have a son who is going to not know fear. And so it's going to be all good. So the next day, Hunding shows up and they have to do battle. And Brunhilde's kind of showing up, kind of helping Siegmund because she can't help herself. But then Wotan shows up. It's like, oh, girl, you need to leave right now. So he shatters the spear that has been pulled out of the tree, and suddenly Siegmund has no weapon. And Hunding just stabs him through the heart with this spear, and Siegmund dies. And, you know, Wotan's still not really happy about this because Siegmund's his son, so he gives Hunding such terrible Phelps face that Hunding dies on the spot. Okay? But at this point, Brunhilde grabs Sieglinde, who's still pregnant, and whisks her off to the east, which is near where Fafnir has settled. So, you know, Wotan couldn't go there and grab the kid back. At this point, that's end of Act 2. Opening of Act 3, the very famous Ride of the Valkyries that you've all heard before.
Rabbit, kill the rabbit, kill the rabbit.
Which is basically all the Valkyries going around, oh, psst, girl, did you hear what Brunhilde did? Oh, damn, she defied Wotan. Oh, that's crazy. Right? That's basically Ride of the Valkyries. Anyway, eventually, Wotan catches up with her, and he's like, well, you know, oh, favorite child of mine, I have to punish you now. So I'm going to strand you on a mountaintop encircled by fire until some random schmo comes along and saves you. She says, no, please, but, you know, this is what you really wanted. He's like, well, okay, well, I'll temper my judgment, and here's my judgment. And so Die Walküre wraps up with arguably one of the only true arias in the entire 15 hours of music. And it opens with a reference to the Valkyries. Sounds like this. And then he goes on to say, well, you know, I really need to punish you, even though I love you, so I'm going to put you on this mountaintop until a hero who doesn't know fear shows up. Well, gosh, that sounds a lot like the Valsung theme. I wonder who he could be. So at this point, you know, then he starts acknowledging how, yes, you did this because you love me, and we enter into what's called the Brunhilde's compassionate love theme, which actually sounds a lot like Wotan's spear theme. Listen to the like little descending line right at the beginning. And then Wotan spiels for a really long time, and then he finally starts to put her to sleep. And here we get a little bit of Valhalla music, followed by what's considered to be the sleeping Brunhilde music. Da, 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 ya, da, da. Has dictated that I must punish you. So he brings forth his magic spear. And summons Loga. Cast magic fire around the mountaintop. And here's where things start to get really cool, I think, is something that Wagner does with these themes is he layers them. Now he finally talks for one last time about how this hero who doesn't know fear is going to find her. And Wagner layers it over the top of the sleeping Brunhilde music. See if you can hear both of them. And as the entire opera fades out, what he does is he takes the Sleeping Brunhilde music and the Fate motif, and he runs them both alternatingly on top of the Magic Fire music as the opera fades out to the end. Did anyone stay to the very end of the 10-minute long credits of Return of the King? Well, Howard Shore gives it a little homage to that with the very end of the credits. Anyway, I'm way over time, so very briefly, I'm just going to say that in Siegfried, the action happens. Nothung gets reforged. It sounds like this. I was kind of teasing at with that big long falling thing. This is Wotan's design that one of his children is going to reforge this sword. Anyway, Siegfried takes off and he's got a magic horn that he calls on. It sounds like this.
Oh, mighty warrior of great fighting stock, might I inquire to ask him, what's up, Doc?
A bunch of other stuff happens. And then we get to the last opera in the cycle, Götterdämmerung, or Twilight of the Gods.
Spoiler alert.
Which even more bad stuff happens, and virtually everyone except for the Ride Maiden dies in the end. But to be fair...
Well, what did you expect in an opera? A happy ending?
So with that, I'd like to say thank you so much for your attention, and I'd be happy to take a couple of questions at the very least. Woo.